You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
So welcome back to another episode of Soul Chronicles. We're excited to talk today about one of the world's probably biggest Nike fans, Eminem.
Yay, let's get into all the juicy bits, girl.
Okay, so the year, it's probably like 2000, I guess, and literally every time Eminem is photographed, he has on some item of Nike apparel, footwear. He always would have on some like Nike branded hat or something.
I was about to say the hat. Yeah. He always had the hat, the swoosh hat.
Yeah. And he was just like a huge Nike fan. I mean, just, I think maybe probably even before he became a celebrity or famous, he probably, that's probably just like the product that he wore back in Detroit or something, I'm assuming. I think we spoke earlier just about, although Nike as a brand at the time was not paying artists to wear the products, they didn't have any paid ambassador kind of programs or anything like that. So just the artists that really loved the brand, whenever we had an opportunity that they could receive payment, whether it's for a performance or an ad campaign, we always tried to tap into the artists who supported the brand the most when it was relevant.
Because artists were starting to want a little bit more, and the reason is because they understood their value, right? And we weren't mad at that at all. We did too. But we didn't have blank checks with a Nike swoosh on that we could just write to everybody. So we had to be creative on how we engaged artists and did something a little more for them. So talk about this Eminem project and what your role was with it, Mohammeda.
Okay, well, we did a couple things with Eminem. One of them was this shoe design project. And we know, we spoke in a few episodes about how artists wanted to have their own Nike shoe and they wanted to receive profits off the sale of those shoes, like what eventually has happened with like Kanye and Travis Scott. I'm like, how did Travis get a sneaker? But whatever. Okay, back to Eminem.
Stay focused.
Sorry, Jay-Z. Everything is, when I heard Travis Scott, I was like, Jay-Z, I am so sorry you never got your Nike shoe. Lord, Travis Scott got one. Okay.
He got his Reebok deal, so he's not in a corner somewhere crying. He's probably counting his money. So he's fine.
So anyway, because we couldn't sort of do the kind of like sneaker deals that people wanted to do, what we were able to come up with was, and I think this was your idea, even though it was so long ago, you probably don't even remember, but we kind of came up with an idea to do a very limited run of artist branded sneaker that the profits would go to charity. So I believe we selected like probably about 6 celebrities from TV, music, and film, and work with them to design a shoe. They chose the charity of their choice. And I believe it was 500 pairs, 1,000 pairs, probably max, I don't remember. I feel like maybe it was 500 pairs. They worked with our design team to customize the shoe with like their colors and any other interesting details they wanted to add to the shoe. The shoes were produced. They were sold probably at some select retailers. And then again, the profits went to the celebrities charity of choice. So Eminem was one of the artists that we did this with. On my music side, that's what I recall. I did a shoe with Nelly at the time. He was really relevant, really doing a lot with Nike. He had his song, Air Force One. He was just super hot and I did a lot of work with him. So he designed a shoe. Eminem designed a shoe. And also Pharrell designed a shoe. So we'll talk about Pharrell's shoe on another episode. So that was one project that I did with Eminem.
And on that one too, didn't Sarah Jessica Parker do a shoe and you went out and met with her?
Yes, actually, yeah. So I think the TV manager, I think each of us had to like come up with some celebrities that we wanted to partner with. So Sarah Jessica Parker worked with a TV manager. And because I was in New York and Sarah Jessica Parker was in New York, I met with her to go over the design of her shoe. And I remember she had this like beautiful Hogan bag at the time. And she was like, this is the color scheme that I want to go with. And we were using that bag as the inspiration. And she was like super cool. And you know, her style is just like crazy. So yeah, so she was one of the people who we worked with on the shoe partnership as well.
Yeah, and I think because for some reason, I wasn't dealing with as many celebrities day to day, but I did have a handful of people who I kept that I worked exclusively with. I think Justin Timberlake was one of them because, interesting sidebar, we'd had such a great relationship with them when NSYNC first came out. I mean, they were just some kids nobody had ever heard of before, right? And so their management brought them in and we just formed a really great relationship with them. And Justin was just a Nike fool. When I say he was crazy about Nike. So we became really close because of that. And this part of the story really kind of gives me a stomachache. But I brought this design concept to him and he was over the moon. Muhammad, you would have thought I told him it's going to be Christmas every day for 30 days. And you are going to get a ton of presents. I mean, he was so thrilled. And so when I went back to Nike and we started talking about it, they got really set on him designing a women's product because the women's business needed a push. He had a huge women's fan base. And we thought having him design a women's shoe would really help, right? Mm-hmm. We started talking about the shoe he was going to design. And I mentioned lightly that it was going to be targeted toward the women's audience. And he was like, whoa, 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 wait, what? I'm like, well, yeah, we want you to design a women's shoe. You know, we think it'll be real. He was like, I don't want to do that. I want to design a cool men's shoe. Right? That's not what they're offering you. And so he ended up not doing it. But I was just sick to my stomach because he was so excited. Right. And he really wanted to design a guy's shoe. And that just was not in the cards for him. So anyway, back to Eminem.
Yeah, I think Eminem actually designed, I don't remember the exact shoe, but maybe it was an Air Force 2. Like, we weren't doing the product, the main, like, Air Force 1 and the hot things. Well, actually, we did. It was actually, you know what, it was up to the artist to choose the shoe that they wanted. Again, most of them were really big fans, so they had, like, their favorite shoe that they wanted. So Eminem, maybe it was Air Force 2, but I'm not really sure. So anyway, we worked with him on that.
Yeah, and did he ever come into the celebrity showroom? I feel like he came in there and was just losing his mind. Or am I making that up?
It's possible. I never brought him in, but like my assistant would work very closely with them. I mean, he was a client who needed a lot of time and attention. So I just kind of like dedicated my assistant to like really be able to focus on them. So I'm sure he came into the showroom. I didn't bring him in personally, but I'm sure that he had been in before because we worked a lot with them.
There was a period in time where it was just exchange for exchange, right? Artists would just be happy to get a pair of Nike sneakers and to get 3, 4, 5 pairs and to get them before they came out. Mm-hmm. Like that was the real currency on their part. I have something that nobody else has. I can go to this really cool secret underground celebrity showroom. You have to make an appointment to go there. You can't bring a bunch of people in there and the star has to show up themselves to be one-on-one with us, right? Because that's where a lot of the relationship building would take place. And we had a basketball court and we had a putting green and just all the latest and greatest. It was very visually appealing, the showroom that was created for celebrities. And so at the time, that was the currency. I can get in there and I can get some free shoes. And
we're talking about our office in LA, like that was for entertainment marketing. We had
that was our office.
Yes. So we had a dedicated space that was like a showroom for celebrities, film, TV, music celebrities to come and sort of do like their own personal shopping of Nike stuff. Yes.
Yeah. And I think let's spend a little bit of time talking about that because I do think people want to hear about our celebrity encounters. But I do think there's a segment of listeners who really want to get into this business. Or people who are in the business already and they would just be interested to see like how things worked then and how they've evolved now. So in talking about this celebrity showroom, there was so much that came with that, Mohammeda. We ended up having just thousands and thousands and thousands of SKUs of product that we would manage on site. And that's an operational monster, if you will, ordering the product, getting the product in. We oversaw a warehouse and a warehouse full of people and train those people. And we had to track every single item that went out, and it had a dollar value attached to that item. And we had a budget that we had to track against all of this work. And then we would build out the space and make it cool. So we'd be hiring architects, or our boss Pam really did help spearhead this role, but we worked very closely with budgeting, even creating the space and special build outs for the space.
I just wanted to add that this is the showroom that Nikita wanted to be the receptionist at.
Just you wanted to know that. Let that go.
So continue.
If you keep up, we're going to tell some more of your driving in LA stories. I mean, but yeah, no. So, and then there was an operations person who I oversaw, who that was her whole role, just budgeting and spreadsheets and product. And then you convinced me to hire Stacy from Nike Town in Beverly Hills to come be our buyer. So there was a lot of business that was happening behind the scenes that we had to, it was almost like we were running our own little company within Nike. And we had all the same responsibilities that you would have in running a company, from profit and loss to having weekly meetings and giving people their task and our goals and our objectives. So we were running a little mini business within Nike that had to be so buttoned up that it was without question profitable and made a difference for the organization. So I think that's important for people to hear, and also for people who are thinking about how they can bring innovation to their jobs, or they want to start a new division or a department. It's all going to come down to the profitability and the bottom line. How can you create something that doesn't cost the company a lot of money, but has a huge return, and that's going to elevate the organization as a whole and you as well? So I just wanted to get that little piece out there. But back to M&M, Mohammeda. So,
but one of the big kind of projects that I worked with M&M on was booking him for a really big Nike event. It was like this indoor snowboarding event, right? It was in LA somewhere. It was like some massive thing through, I think it was through our ACG division. Mm-hmm. And they were creating this like indoor snowboarding experience, like bringing in snow and top snowboarders, like a whole experience. And they wanted M&M to be the performer. And this was key because, as I said, you know, artists who wore Nike so much, they did a lot of free advertising at the end of the day, right? So I was excited to actually have an opportunity that he could receive a check. And that made his team all really excited because they felt like it was kind of being a bit more reciprocal in this relationship. Because to be honest, they had beef with us, right? Mm-hmm. They were not happy. Like, I don't even know if it was M&M himself. I felt like it was his manager, his road manager. They were the ones probably egging him on. I mean, he was an artist. He was just happy getting the stuff that he loved for free. I don't know how much he personally had an issue with not having this deal, but his team, oh no, they had issues and they were always on me about it. So finally I had this opportunity to get them a check, and I was going to meet with them one-on-one. I mean, this is like pre 9/11 when like airports were like a whole different story. I just remember that M&M was flying into LA. And you know how hands-on we were with artists. Like,
yes.
we were very hands-on, very, very protective of them too. And I was somehow, I don't even know why. Why was I going to pick him up from the airport? I mean, we had a car service, but for some reason
that was part of it though. I mean, I know when we worked with talent, and I learned this from Leah at the NBA, when I would have a car pick up somebody, particularly if it was an event that we were all going to, we would always get in the car and meet them because that was a really intimate place in the car that we can talk to them about what was about to happen at this event, right?
And sometimes too, even if we weren't headed to an event, but we couldn't carve out any meeting time, I mean, we're going to make something happen. Like, you don't have time to meet. What's your schedule? Well, I land at such and such. Okay, well, I'm going to meet you and we'll ride to your hotel then and I'll tell you my thing. So I think that was probably just a function of you being like, I'm going to sit with you, we're going to talk, and we're going to understand what this is. Because at that point, you're right, I think you really needed, and this was a huge thing for Eminem, let me just say that. Let me just say that doing this ACG thing where you were importing snow, I don't even know where y'all got the snow from, but bringing it to the Forum and doing a whole snowboarding event in LA in the middle of whatever month that was.
Right.
Because no month is snow month in LA. Right. Let me just say that. So I just think you were like, oh, I'm going to get with you and we need to talk this through. And that's why you ended up at the airport.
Right. And plus, we just always wanted to make sure nothing happened on our time. So yeah, so it's the airport. I go to the gate. Okay, this is like before, like all this security stuff, that didn't even exist. Like literally, I went to the gate and I just know I probably look like a 16-year-old. Like, how is this the Nike person? This little girl? So, right, you know, of course I know who Eminem is and I, you know, I know who the road manager and stuff like that. So I picked them up from the airport, we ride in the car, and they were ready for me. Like, I don't know if they had been talking about it on the plane ride or what. I felt like as soon as we got in the car and put the seatbelts on, they were like, so yes, about our deal. Why don't we have a deal? And I was like, listen, Eminem, is this like the product that you love? You have a choice. That was kind of my thing. You have a choice of what you want to wear. You wear Nike because you love Nike. Am I right? And he had to be like, yeah. If you don't want to wear Nike anymore, like, stop wearing Nike. Like, I mean, we cannot give you a deal right now. There's nothing that we can do. We can support you in these different ways, but you wear the product because you love it. And, like, we hashed it out. He knew that that was true. And, you know, I think they just needed to hear it from somebody and, like, really feel that they weren't being taken advantage of in any way. He wasn't being taken advantage of. And I mean, I thought that was really important just because those were the roles, like we represented the brand. And if people liked us as people and as humans, like we were the representatives of the brand. So then it kind of like made everything okay.
Yeah, great. Yeah. And I mean, I think too, you know, right now there's so much talk about diversity and inclusion and giving people a fair shot and a fair chance. And it sounds like in that dynamic that you're doing somebody a favor, that you're giving somebody something that they didn't deserve or that they haven't earned. And the reality is, no, you're benefiting your brand by bringing people who have a different point of view, a different perspective, and who have, in our case anyway, a unique ability to connect with people and who are brainy and smart enough to create opportunities that work. The reason I'm saying that is because I don't think anybody else could have turned that around.
Right.
You got big grown men. You won Muhammad in the car by yourself. And you basically handle the situation. And oh, by the way, create something that was just so amazing. And oh, by the way, that he still got a check for. I mean, that ACG snowboarding event, you weren't asking him to do that for free.
Right.
Let's be clear.
Yeah.
I believe we paid a premium. And didn't you have to, this is, again, talking about this world being so small and being very careful about how you handle relationships. Didn't you end up having to go back to William Morris, to Kara, to negotiate this Eminem deal?
Oh my God, this was like, I'm not gonna say like sweet revenge or whatever, but as we said in the first episode, we both worked at William Morris Agency. I previously worked in the booking department at William Morris with Kara Lewis, who happened to be Eminem's booking agent, right? Now, typically the way that booking an artist works is that you go directly to their booking agent, negotiate the details through their agent, and most promoters or whatever don't know the artist themselves. But because of the nature of the relationship of our role, I know the artist. I know their managers. I call Paul Rosenberg and was like, hey, this is what's happening. This is how much money I have. And he's like, cool, it's a done deal. Call Kara so that it's handled. So when I called her, it was from a whole different level. And I know she was like, she thought that, I mean, I'm in her mind, I'm speculating, but that when I left William Morris, like that was it for me. You know what I mean? You know how people at these mm-hmm. jobs, at these big companies that we're talking about, that we work at, that we worked at, you know, people feel like this is the end all be all. Once you leave me, that's it for you. And
yes, because they don't realize the big dream that you have for your own life. They're looking at it from the perspective of the dream that they have for their life. And in their life, this is the pinnacle for them. This company is the pinnacle for them. Whereas for us, I mean, I can speak for Nikita and Muhammad, right? And perhaps a lot of people listening, our desire and our design for our life is so much bigger than any average person could possibly imagine. So yeah, when you leave the NBA or you leave William Morris or ICM or Nike or any of these things, people think that you have absolutely lost your mind. If you're Dave Chappelle and you walk away from $50 million, people think that you need to be committed. And so, yeah, I'm sure on some level, she probably, even if only subconsciously, thought that, oh, well, there goes, you know, another one bites the dust.
Yeah.
Not knowing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was just really great to be able to call her. And yes, I'm in a position where I'm actually doing business with you now. I'm not like answering your phones all day. So yeah, so we booked Eminem for that, and that was huge. And you know what, from that point on, we had just a really great relationship with him and his team, and just anything that they needed that we could deliver, whether it was tour jackets and tour accessory, whatever it is that Nike could do for him, we kind of like always did that for him.
I think that this whole story, I hope, is inspiring for people, particularly when you're thinking about creative ways to bring innovation into your work. I mean, there's always going to be some level of impossibility to your tasks. And I don't know about you, Muhammad, but there were so many times at Nike in particular where I would come up with a concept and sit back and just be like, this feels so impossible. I don't know how mm-hmm. this is going to work. And then there would oftentimes just be a lot of roadblocks into getting things accomplished. Mm-hmm. But we were always able, and that's the one thing I like about our partnership. And, you know, for people who maybe haven't heard the first episode and how we got in, maybe they'll go back and listen to it, because I do think that having someone that you can bounce ideas off of, who wants to be successful but also wants you to be successful, and that person doesn't have to work with you in your same company. It could just be someone you're partnering with to help each other go forward. But the beautiful thing is that we were on the same team, and we could always, if we ever got in a room together to solve a problem, trust me, it was going to be handled and it was going to be solved. And so that's why I love this Eminem story, because there's so many things that you overcame to make it happen. And all the other artists who were on the specialty shoe deal mm-hmm. Are people who are all to this day still very relevant. You don't often get a lot of credit for, I know I probably haven't. And that is having our fingers so on the pulse of entertainment back then that we really were able to hone in on people who we knew we're gonna go the distance. And that's hard to do, because you never know what an artist or an actor, somebody can come out with a beautiful film that is just genius, and you think that they're on their way to Oscar worthiness, and they never make another film.
Definitely. And when we talk about the Pharrell one, I'm just gonna, you know, we'll dig a little bit deeper. But just to go back to that, having the pulse on what's hot, and as you said, how most people feel about working at these brands, what I want to like really kind of hone in on is that we were hot before we worked at any of those brands, right? You were the hot girl coming from Grambling. Like, I was a hot girl from Howard. So like, the brand didn't make me, right? That was what, like, that's what was confusing for like people. Like, I'm going to be hot wherever I go, and whatever company it is, they don't make me, I make them hot. Right. That's my kind of concept. So that's how I go into it. So people be like, oh my God, how could you leave? I'm like, trust and believe wherever I end up next, it's going to be, I'm going to be hot there too.
Yeah, no. And I think that for a lot of us listening to this podcast, that is our truth. Whether you're an accountant, a physician, you know, a teacher, for a lot of us, we have been born and we have been cultivated to be twice as good, three times as good, depending on your generation, as the average person out there. You know, I don't know about you, Muhammad, but my mom, my dad, my aunts and uncles, my older cousins, they always drove this notion into me that I had to be better than other people in order just to have a seat at the table. And so when you are really, from a very young age, told that, and you believe it, and so you're always improving, you're always reading, you're always studying, learning, you're the first person to get up, you're the last person to go to bed. And, you know, at a certain point, you're going to have enough tools in your arsenal. And when you're really good at building very important and authentic relationships, you're an unstoppable force. Mm-hmm. And therefore, people really don't know what to do with you. And people really do think that this is the end all be all. And because of a certain level of humility that we bring to the work, people also tend to believe, particularly people who may be in higher authority over you in that particular job, that they're somehow, your success is somehow in relation to them. So because they're so happy to be there, it's just like the devil wears Prada, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They could not fathom that this girl did not want to ultimately be the editor-in-chief of this magazine.
Right.
Like,
right.
Come on, you see the life I'm living. See what I'm doing. You see the respect I have. I'm using air quotes, you guys. The respect I have in the industry. Of course you want to be me. And this person has so much more substance. They had love in their life. They had friends. They had a whole other part of themselves. And the job wasn't all of it. And because of that, it was very easy to walk away. And I do think that's an important place to spend a little bit of time. Because if you do find yourself in a high profile role, which that's pretty much the only types of roles we've had, it does tend to be all encompassing and all consuming for some people. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed people who I have worked with, or maybe I didn't even work directly with them, but I just observed them from afar. And the job was their life.
Yeah.
And their whole identity was wrapped up into this. And so because it was their life, because they had reached sort of like the pinnacle of their career, because they could now say, oh, I'm such and such with XYZ company and have and get that reservation at this restaurant. Mm-hmm. They believed that everybody wanted that life. And to your point, because we'd already been really conditioned to be amazing, no matter where we were, our identity was never wrapped up in any of these roles. I mean, to be honest, I can't talk about you, Muhammad, but for Nikita, I wouldn't even tell people where I worked most of the time. If somebody was introducing me to somebody, they'd be like, oh, what do you do? I'd be like, marketing.
Right, no, we couldn't tell people. Not only could I not tell people, my parents were not allowed to tell people where I worked because of the response that people had when they found out. So yeah, you'd have to grill me for like 15 minutes before I would say the name of the company that I worked at.
Yeah. And I think for me, it was a couple things. Number one, I didn't want people asking me for a bunch of stuff. That was number one. Number two is I just got so tired, depending on what type of people I was telling this information to. I know when I worked at the NBA, I would tell somebody, you know, I work at the NBA, they'd be like, oh, you work at Madison Square Garden? No, I work at the NBA. Oh, you work for the Knicks? No. Well, what team do you work for? I work for all the teams. I'm telling you, I work for the league. And so it just was so frustrating, more times than not, having to explain people. And then the confused looks on their face, they would just be like,
how?
And they would, in some ways, they'd still walk away and be like,
Yeah, no, that's not true. Or I work for Nike. They'd be like, oh, you work in Nike Town?
Right. Oh, my God. That's what people said all the time.
Nike Town. So, yeah, in order to just keep my blood pressure down, I just would be like, I don't work anywhere. I just have jobs somewhere, yeah. And I don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I just don't want to talk about it. So now this is sort of like a sweet release because we get to talk about it on our terms, right? Yeah. And it's out there now for people to do with it whatever they will.
Yeah. And just kind of associated with Eminem, I worked with Dr. Dre a couple of times, like not even necessarily connected to Eminem, but because they are connected. And Dr. Dre, because we're not going to do another episode on him, so let me just bring this up here. He, like, really loved this limited edition product. And not even, like, Air Force Ones or anything, but we did this limited edition kind of, like, very cool streetwear, these, like, sweatsuits. I don't know if they were, like, velour sweatsuits or something. And Dr. Dre just, like, loved that product. To be honest, I don't even think it was on sale yet. I mean, we just had it, and we were just seeding it to different cool people. And I remember this one time I was going to deliver some product to Dr. Dre, maybe at like the studio or the hotel or something like that. And it was always so interesting. And it was interesting even when I picked Eminem up from the airport and also with Dr. Dre, and I know you're gonna understand this, about how like shy artists are. Like, mm-hmm. So quiet, so shy, like nothing like their like crazy personalities that you see on TV or in the videos. Like, I just remember like Dr. Dre was just like so calm. Like, he didn't even really say that much. He was just so gracious. He loved this product. He was like, how can I get some more? So it's just like really interesting just to see the other side of these personalities. And yeah, just and how comfortable they actually feel with us, because these are very, very intimate settings that we're seeing them. So that says a lot about who we are too, because they have to trust you and they're using their instinct. It's not about what we say. It's just like they're our whole vibe. Like, we respect them, but we're not like hype fans either.
Yeah. Like, I think people can tell that we don't fan out. Like, I am not a fan type person. Mm-hmm. There are artists whose music I really respect and I have a deep emotional connection with. But even as a kid, like, I wouldn't have people's posters on my walls. I mean, no offense to people who did that, but I just never have been a fanatical type person. You know, I told you, I think I see celebrities and I'm just like, hey, girl, hey, right?
They like that.
Yeah, and I do think that's the reason that we're successful, because we are coming at the work objectively, right? So if I'm thinking about who's hot, I'm not coming from a standpoint of like, who do I like? Mm-hmm. I'm coming from a standpoint of like, who makes sense for the brand? Mm-hmm. And who is a person that we could create something really special with? So that's very helpful. And I do think one of the secrets to our success is being in some of these intimate places with celebrities. And I can tell you, being in the studio with people is one of my favorite places to be. From, you know, and we're not going to make episodes about these people, but I know one of my favorite studio stories is Celine Dion. Wow. I mean, you talk about a beautiful human, and her late husband, Rene Angelil. I mean, I'm like, are you an angel who fell from heaven, really? And I'm not trying to get with you because you already got a wife right here, but so kind in a very almost divine kind of way. Mm-hmm. And Renee and Celine, I became very close to them because I was bringing something to them and I happened to be going to the studio and I just stayed. And then when they would perform in certain, you know, when Celine was in Vegas, let's say, I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna be in Vegas. They're like, oh, come to the show, right? Mm-hmm. And so just being able to build those really sweet relationships and meet some very amazing people who just happened to be celebrities was really cool. Same thing with David Foster. I'd be able to call David or he'd call me, and there's certain sneakers that he liked and be able to bring them to him. And now his special is on Netflix, which I recommend people watch it because it's got some very interesting pieces in there and you learn more about the other side of the person, right? But the experiences I had, people like Benny Medina, who interestingly had offered me a job to go work for him. And it was funny because he had come into the showroom. He had a special Nike short and special sneakers that he liked. And one day we were sitting and he was just like, you know, I have a really good eye for talent and you should come work for me, you know? And I was just like, but I was so flattered because look at what he has done and mm-hmm. built. And mm-hmm. no matter, again, you know, you might hear some horror stories about some people, but I always had great relationships with a lot of the people that you hear are so difficult. But anyway, you were saying?
Yeah, no, I was just saying that, I mean, I think you said a lot about like why we were successful in this industry is that we just weren't hype on people. You know, we just really treated them as people, and celebrities rarely get that. They almost, actually, they almost never get that. Mm-hmm. Everyone who they interact with is like fan mode or they work for them. So it's very rare that they meet anybody who is just kind of like, oh, you're cool. Like, as a person, we know you're famous, mm-hmm. but we're not going to deal with that right now. Like, that's not why we're here. So that.
Yeah. And people who were on that super famed out situation, I've avoided like the plague.
Yes.
I would be like, I don't care how famous you are. You could ring my cell phone. You can call my office phone. I would be like, take a message.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, really? You don't want to talk to such and such? No, because I don't like who they are as a person. Yeah. And I don't like how they treat people. And I don't care to do business with them. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay.
So I think we've just come to the end of our time.
Okay. All right. Well, definitely hope you guys enjoyed hearing about our experiences, definitely with Eminem, but just the kind of behind the scenes of what it's like to work in the brand, work with artists, and just kind of like our approach to working with artists.
All right. Until next time. Take care.
Join us for another episode of Soul Chronicles and see who we're going to talk about next.
Thanks for listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.